light was on the right side.
Correct.
Do you have any estimate for visibility that night?
No, I don't.
When you were out on the bridge wing, did you feel any wind?
There was a slight breeze.
From forward, aft, or what?
Yes.
And you don't have any idea what time it was when you reported that light, either the first or the second time?
No, it was shortly after I arrived on watch, but I hadn't looked at my watch at any time.
Did the ship make any course changes after you reported the light?
Yes, it did.
How did you notice this?
The ship's bow relative to the light.
And how was it swinging?
It started swinging toward the right.
Towards the right. Was it a quick movement or a slow movement? Or how could you characterize it?
It was a slow swing.
Okay. Shortly after the vessel started swinging, what took place? Anything unusual?
What time frame are you?
Well, right. You said you saw the bow start swinging to the right. How soon after that did you notice anything take place on the ship? Was there grounding? Was there?
The grounding, but I can't tell you how much time elapsed between the time the turn started.
Okay. You
know, then again, I wasn't looking at my watch.
And how do you characterize the way the vessel grounded?
Well, when we first hit, I heard a scraping sound up forward. It sounded like the bow was scraping over something, and there was a light. I don't know if it was the water splashing up and the lights reflecting off of it or what, but it lit up around the bow. And then feeling of the bottom, scraping, coming to a grinding halt, hitting something, and then stopping.
Was there any bouncing? Was it a continuous screech?
No, it was jolting. The way it stops, it, I don't know, it was, when I felt it, I've been aground before, and it felt just like a vessel going aground. It comes to a jerking stop.
Did you have to hold on?
Was it no.
That, it wasn't that type of feeling?
You could feel the bottom catching.
Out of curiosity, when were you on another vessel that went aground?
I was going up the Mississippi River, and we had just coming around different bends and going into the mud. And the pilot got it off by himself, but I felt it then when we stopped going aground.
After the vessel stopped, is there anything you noticed?
Yes, I heard them. Sounded what I thought at the time was a bullet lifting up forward. We have big mainline bullets, and you can hear when the pressure is above a certain amount, they will lift. And
you're talking about the pressure vacuum
release
valves,
right,
for the bullets.
Correct. And sounded like one of those had lift, and I heard gas coming out, and it smelled what I believe to be inner gas.
Does that inner gas smell the same as the stack gas from the engines?
I couldn't give you a good answer on that.
Do you know what heading the Exxon Valdez was on when it grounded?
After we went aground?
Yes.
I believe it's on 289.
Okay. Is there a gyro repeater on the bridge wing?
Yes, but I got that reading when I went in the bridge, back into the bridge. Saw it on the digital readout.
Right after the vessel grounded, did you notice that the master was on the bridge?
Right after it grounded?
Yes.
When I walked into the bridge wing, I didn't see him immediately.
Did you see him come up later or see him in the bridge wing later?
I saw him a short time later coming out from behind the chart table.
Now, after the vessel grounded, were the engines, were they kept on full ahead, or as it was when the vessel grounded, was there any change in the engine directions?
They were kept full ahead. They were stopped at one point in time. I didn't see when it happened, and I don't know what time it happened.
Did the third mate or the engineer do anything with the engine controls?
After we went aground?
Yes.
Or when we tried to get her off, the third mate used the controls, yes.
And which way the engines were used to try to get the vessel off ground?
Yes, the captain first gave them a dead slow ahead, and then slow ahead, and half ahead, and full ahead.
Did the vessel move?
The heading, slightly. We were giving it hard right and hard left rudder. Also, and the heading changed a little bit, but we didn't move ahead or astern.
The vessel didn't move ahead?
From what I could tell, no.
Now, when you came on watch, was Claire still on the helm?
Yes, she was.
Do you notice when Mr. Kagan came up to relieve him?
No, I didn't.
Going out to the bridge wing to look out, did you hear any course changes or settings being made or given to Mr. Clare?
I don't recall any.
After the vessel grounded and the captain came up to the bridge, did you observe any conversations between the master and the third mate and anyone else?
After the captain came up to the bridge, did he speak with anyone?
Right.
I don't recall any in particular, no.
Did you see the chief mate come up to the bridge?
Yes, at one point in time.
Did the captain talk to him?
Yes.
Did you hear the conversation?
No, I didn't.
Now, did you stay on watch till 4 o'clock that morning?
Yes, I did.
Did you do anything in the wheelhouse after, say, from 12:30 till 4 o'clock?
I went down, and Greg had come back up, and he told me who he had informed, and I went down, and I believe it was the 48 or whoever Greg told me he hadn't talked with yet on license to tell him what had happened or inform him. And then we were sent down later. I was called to wake up the 48 again or give him a call and have him come out on deck, and we put the pilot ladder over on the port side for people either to get off or get onto the vessel.
Did you assist the say when the Coast Guard come aboard?
After we put the pilot ladder over on the port side, I returned back to the bridge, and there was some talking with the Coast Guard, and it ended up they wanted this ladder over on the starboard side. So my watch partner went down with the 48 and helped them shift the ladder. And the 48 brought the Coast Guard personnel up, and that's when I got relieved.
Were the lights ever turned on inside the bridge after the grounding?
No.
Were the lights turned on deck after the grounding?
I believe so.
Did Did you hear any radio communications take place in the wheelhouse?
Yes.
And who were they with, you know?
I heard the captain on the radio. I don't know who he was speaking to. I supposed at that time that it was the coast or vessel traffic. And told him that we were hard aground. That's all I heard him say.
After getting off watch at 4400, what did you do?
I went back to my room.
And did you go to sleep?
Yeah. After a while, yeah. Jack Claire came in and just asked me, you know, what went on. I guess he was still awake. And he went back to his room, and I imagine I went to sleep after that.
What time did you get up Thursday morning?
I have to correct myself just on that last statement. Just before I was about to go to sleep, we got a call. And 4 to 8, the two ABs, myself, and I believe Bob, and the pumpman, and the oiler, Frank Boyle, were all out on deck. And by this time, they had confirmed with the Baton Rouge coming alongside to light her off of her, and we started bringing some flexible hose we had up forward in the starboard locker back aft, and we started working on that and getting the lines out, etc., ready to tie up the Baton Rouge that morning.
Do you know what time the Baton Rouge finally showed up?
I don't recall, no.
On the Thursday before leaving Valdez, did you plan to go ashore?
No, I didn't.
Any reason why not?
We had a short period of time. I stay on the 12 to 4 watch, and by the time you wake up and you have to go back on watch at noon, there's not much time.
Do you have any jobs or activities in port when the vessel's loading on watch?
On watch?
Yeah.
Any jobs or activities would you?
Yeah, do you work, who are you working for when the vessel's loading?
When I'm on watch, I work for the mate.
Okay. When you get off watch, do you have any jobs to do?
Not usually. There's no specific maintenance going on.
There's a weight room on the ship, but what do you do for recreational activities?
There's also a bike on board, and there's a rowing machine, also in the weight room.
What is your average monthly overtime on the Valdez?
I guess approximately 140 hours.
Okay. Now, on weekends, how does that count as overtime? Is the 8-hour watch 8 hours of overtime?
On weekends, if you work on watch during the day, it's overtime. When you work during the week on watch, it's just required on watch. You work on watch, and if you work over that 4 hours during the day, that's your overtime. But on Saturday...
You're listening to testimony by able-bodied seaman Maureen Jones, who is talking about what happened after she came on watch as the lookout on the Exxon Valdez on midnight, March 24th. Jones, this is live coverage, or now I guess tape-delayed coverage, of the hearing into the crash of the Exxon Valdez by the National Transportation Safety Board.
Dr. Berkey? Ms. Jones, are you aware of the Exxon policy on drugs and alcohol?
Yes, I am.
How did you become aware of that?
We were, different newsletters were published, and they put them on the bulletin boards on the ships.
And what do you understand that policy to say?
That if you're caught drinking or having drugs on the ship, you would be fired.
Have you ever seen a copy of that policy?
I don't recall for certain.
When did you become aware there was a policy? Before the accident or grounding or after?
Yes, before, on different ships I've seen.
On different Exxon ships?
Yes.
How did you understand that policy would be enforced or implemented, if you will?
I don't understand what you're asking.
How would the policy itself be implemented? Who would determine that drugs or alcohol was used on the vessel, or was on the vessel, whether used or otherwise?
I would imagine it would be the master.
Have you ever seen alcohol on board the vessel?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever seen anyone that appeared to be under the influence of alcohol or drugs?
No, I haven't. And excuse me, I have seen alcohol on the vessel. When I first started with Exxon, they used to give you little pint bottles of wine for your holiday meals, but they have since discontinued that.
When was that discontinued?
I believe Christmas this year was the first time they quit doing that. That was to be with the new Coast Guard regulation. I believe that was why they discontinued it. I'm not for sure, though.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. It was discontinued at Christmas time? Is that what you're saying?
Or maybe Thanksgiving this year. I'm not sure. I was off the vessel before Thanksgiving. I believe that's when it was.
Of 88?
Correct.
Have you had any of your material searched or otherwise to determine whether or not this policy was being complied with, either if you went ashore and came back on the vessel?
After going ashore?
Yes.
No, I have never been searched.
Did anyone ever ask you that if you had brought anything aboard that contained alcohol and or drugs?
No, not that I can recall.
That's all I have.
Dr. LaRiche?
Bob LaRiche from the state will start questioning Maureen Jones. Listening to live coverage of the NTSB hearing on KSK Anchorage. This is brought to you by KSK Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN.
You told us that you came on watch approximately 2350.
Prior to that, yes. I was on the bridge by that time, I believe.
How did you know that? What time it was?
I usually leave my room at 2345, or awful close to it. And I proceeded directly to the bridge, and it doesn't take long to get there.
Were you sitting in the room when Mr. Radke testified?
No, I had already left my... Oh, excuse me,
today? Just before you...
For part of it?
Yeah. The way he tells it is he left the bow at 2350 or shortly thereafter and met you in the passageway about 5 minutes later. Can you explain that discrepancy?
No, I can't.
So you say it was 2350 because that's when you usually did this, is that right? Usually
yes.
Got up. Okay, thank you. Okay, you haven't mentioned today, but after you took your post, did you ever see the Busby light?
I remember seeing some lights astern of us. I'm not sure which lights they were.
You say you saw these lights astern?
Or astern of us, yes.
Okay. Do you remember what color they were?
Not at this time, no.
Was in her previous interview that she's here. Okay, did you report any of those lights astern?
No, I didn't.
I believe in your previous interview with the NTSB, you told of seeing the light approximately a beam, or just abaft the beam, when you came on watch. So, after thinking about it more, you believe that light was astern?
When I gave the NTSB hearing, that was quite soon after the accident. Right now, it's not that clear in my mind exactly where these lights were. The one I remember for sure seeing was a flashing red light forward.
Yes, we'll get to that one in approximately 6 to 10 minutes. Okay, after you came on board and saw these lights, either a beam or a stern, about how long was it before you saw this flashing red? As best you can recall.
I'll make a guess of 7 to 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
That's just a guess.
That's fine. And when you first reported this light, you reported it as broad on the starboard bow.
Correct.
Now, given your knowledge of your capabilities and your licensing, would it have been within 1 point of broad if you had called it broad? How accurate were you when you're reporting directions?
I don't understand what you're asking.
I'm asking, broad on the starboard bow has a very specific meaning.
Correct.
And how many degrees off the bow is that? What does broad mean?
Technically, broad is 45 degrees.
Okay. If it had been 3 points on the starboard bow, what direction would it have been?
What direction would it have been?
If broad is 45 degrees, what is 3 points off the bow?
Approximately, that would be my guess.
It's 33 and a quarter, actually.
33 and a quarter.
So when you reported this as broad, how sure are you that you're within 5 degrees either side of 45 degrees, or could this have been anywhere from 2 points to 6 points off the bow?
Well, I'm not up there with a protractor, you know, measuring the exact angle. From what my experience and from where I call broad on the starboard bow, that's where this light was.
Do you ever call anything 3 points on the bow?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and
more often I call them broad, though.
Okay. Okay, you saw Greg, you saw Mr. Cousins when you walked in to report this first sighting of the blinking red light as broad on the bow. I believe you saw him in the chart room, hunched over a chart. Is that correct?
Leaned over a chart. Correct.
Leaned over a chart. Did he have a pencil in his hand?
I don't know. I just made a quick glance, saw that he was there, and reported the light.
So you don't know whether he had dividers or a protractor or anything?
I wasn't studying.
Okay. Then you left the chart room, went back on the wing. About how long would that take you to leave the chart room and walk to the wing?
After I reported it and he acknowledged it?
Yes.
Give you a guess of 5 seconds.
5 seconds. And then was the first thing you did on arriving again on the wing, again count the flashes on the light?
Yes, I looked at it again and realized it was every 4 seconds.
Okay, and you immediately returned, left the wing again and went back to the bridge?
And as soon as I realized it was every 4 seconds.
How many seconds after counting it would you say? What I'm trying to get at is how long was it from the time you left Mr. Cousins in the over the chart until you returned to the bridge to report the actual flashing time of 4 seconds. About, was that less than a minute?
It would only be a guess. I can't answer that.
Would your guess be something less than a minute?
I would only be guessing. I can't give you a definite answer.
Thank you. But did you do anything other than what you reported, that is, walk directly to the wing, count the light, walk directly back in?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. And when you returned to the bridge, Mr. Cousins was where?
When I returned to the bridge, he was at the port radar.
He was at the port radar. And you reported the light was actually 4 seconds, and you said Mr. Cousins acknowledged that. What did he say precisely, can you remember?
I don't remember his exact words.
But was he calm?
Yes, he was.
Did you ever hear Mr. Cousins speak to Bob Kagan, to Mr. Kagan, on the bridge this time?
Not when I was in the bridge.
Okay. Now, you were on the wing, I believe, when the ship grounded. Is that correct?
Correct.
And how long did you stay on the wing before you went back inside? After the ship came to a halt.
After we came to a halt, and I realized for sure that we were stopped, I just walked into the bridge. I don't know.
Okay. When you walked into the bridge, before Captain Hazelwood arrived on the scene, were Mr. Cousins and Mr. Kagan involved in any conversation?
No, they weren't.
They were both standing there silently?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Who was standing at the helm at that time?
I don't recall.
Could it have been Mr. Cousins?
Dr. LaRouche?
Yeah.
I think she said she doesn't.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I do apologize. One more question. Two more questions, Ms. Jones. When you returned to your quarters and Jack, Mr. Clare came in about 4 a.m, I guess. And you said you talked about what had happened. What did you talk about? What did you tell him you thought had happened?
He just asked what it felt like, and I told him exactly what I felt. I told you about the scraping sound and coming to a jerking halt.
And did he have an opinion on why it had happened?
We didn't talk about that I recall.
Okay. That's all, Ms. Jones. Thank you very much. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Howitt?
Questions?
Thank you. Commander Waldman?
Mr. Jones, I have several questions concerning the lookout responsibilities and directions to the lookout. Were any directions given to you on this trip or previous trips on specific things to look for as lookout?
Not that I can recall, no.
This is lookout Maureen Jones being interviewed now by Daryl Waldron of the Coast Guard, who's going to try and elicit why she didn't realize the significance of seeing that light over on the starboard side when it should have been to the port side.
You looked in the radar and saw ice. Do you recall where it was in relation to the heading flasher?
I said earlier that I don't remember exactly the first time I actually looked at the radar, if it was before or after the grounding. And I couldn't tell you where the ice was now.
Okay. After the grounding, you did look at the radar during the next 3 hours that you were on watch?
Yes, I believe so.
Did you see ice at that time?
I saw what I thought was ice on the radar, and I asked Greg what it, or didn't he confirm that it was ice? Yes.
Do you recall what range or bearing it was from the heading of the vessel?
No, I don't.
When the vessel was coming right, after you had reported the light the second time, you said the vessel started coming to the right and started swinging. Where was the light in relation to the bow of the vessel when you felt the grounding occur?
I couldn't tell you for sure.
If you remember back watching the, you were watching the bow swing.
Correct.
And the way you knew it was swinging was because of the relationship between it and the flashing red light, is that correct?
Correct.
You don't recall at what point in that relationship that you felt the vessel ground?
I don't recall where the light was when we actually went aground, no.
Do you remember if the bow ever crossed the light? Do you remember if the bow ever crossed the light before you ground, before the grounding occurred?
I remember us turning, and the next thing I remember was us going aground. The rest is just blank.
Shortly after you started turning?
A while after we started turning.
Can you estimate the time between the start of the turn and the grounding?
It would just be a guess. I can't really estimate it. It would just be a guess.
Okay. Before or after the grounding, did you happen to see a red sector light from the port, from the aft on the port stern?
No, I didn't ever see a red light aft on the port side.
Okay. Was there any discussion on the bridge after the grounding of what caused the, what happened?
Not in front of me. I didn't hear any discussion.
How about down in the cruise mess or anywhere else on the vessel?
Directly after the grounding? Or?
Right.
Well, we all wondered. You know, we were talked about it after a while. You know, when I was out there working with the 4-8 and everyone, talked about it a little bit.
What was said?
Well, no one really knew what happened. You know, the only person who knew were the two people who were on the bridge. I was on the lookout. I couldn't tell.
While you were on the lookout, the door to the starboard side was open.
Correct.
Did you hear any course changes or orders?
No, I did not.
Can you normally hear from that distance conversations in the wheelhouse?
No, you can't.
How many minutes after the last light report, or how much time occurred after the last light report, did you feel the grounding?
Can't remember.
Have you ever seen any crew members or officers come back aboard the vessel intoxicated?
No, I haven't.
Have you heard or have knowledge of alcohol use on this vessel or any other Exxon vessel that you've been employed with?
No, I haven't.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Deppe.
Maureen, you said that you worked 140 hours overtime a month. Can you tell us how much of that was on watch and how much was off watch?
Well, it'd just be a guess since I don't have my information with me. It's on the record in the computer at Exxon there how much of it was actually on watch. There would be 8 hours on Saturday, which would be on watch, also 4 on Sunday. And it depends on how many times you came in the port. The other ones would be penalty time.
Okay, just the point is that a lot of the overtime was time that you were on watch. It wasn't time that you were during normal rest periods that you would be working. It would be time that you would actually be working anyway, and you were getting paid overtime for it.
Correct.
That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Coluccio.
Ms. Jones, aren't there instruments on the bridge that you can see from the bridge wing that tell you the course of the vessel, the rudder angle indicator, and like that? Aren't there some instruments on each bridge wing?
There's a rudder angle indicator and also a gyro repeater that is usually covered when you're out to sea.
What was the first one? I didn't hear you. Was it the rudder angle indicator?
Yes.
So from the bridge wing at any time, you could see the position of the rudder from the rudder angle indicator, and you could also see the course that was displayed there.
Yes, it's possible.
Did any time while you were on the bridge wing observe either of these two instruments?
No.
Thank you. No more questions.
Ms. Jones, what does ice look like on a radar scope?
What does it look like? Just like a target, regular target, except usually sometimes smaller. Looks like a small target.
So you'll see a return, a primary return or something. You won't see necessarily an outline, but you will see a return of some kind?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you here this morning when Mr. Cousins drew on the map his identification of where he thought the northern edge of this ice was in relation to Busby Point?
Yes, I saw that on the TV.
Do you feel comfortable that is, in your opinion, where that he identified that correctly?
I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Okay. Thank you. I have no other questions either. Thank you, Ms. Jones. You're excused. I have 6:15. We have one more witness. Let's take a 10-minute break. We will return at 6:25, at which time Mr. Robert Kagan will be called to the witness stand. Mr. Kagan, if you can be ready at 6:25 to testify. Thank you.
And so we're about to take another break in this rather lengthy first day of investigation into the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. I'm Steve Heimel here with Bruce Melzer, and we'll be leaving you for a few moments, but let's briefly recap what's happened. We've been talking to Exxon Valdez crew members this afternoon, and we've heard from the watch people, the able-bodied sea people, and I guess you'd have to say, Bruce, that these people were not as forthcoming as they might have been.
We're having a difficult time getting a picture of what really happened on the bridge. For example, Maureen Jones, the last person who we hear testified, she said she was on the bridge right after the accident and said that there was, as far as she, I mean, the way she described it, there was silence. They had just run aground and they were not, Robert Kagan, who was at the helm, and Gregory Cousins, who was the third mate who was commanding the ship at the time. She said there was no discussion between them. They weren't trying to figure out what was happening. And so we're getting some very different image of what it was like. People are very limited in the scope of how far they're willing to venture. They're not willing to offer any explanations of what they thought was going on. They're very careful to describe what they saw, and they've been real imprecise about that. Not sure when they saw lights and where exactly those lights were.
Been a question. We've had one person who said that they saw no ice, and now we have Maureen Jones saying that as the lookout, she saw something on the radar screen that she asked Greg Cousins, the officer of the watch, whether it was ice, and he said it was, and that's about as far as that one went. So there's some contradiction there. Then we have a crew member earlier today who said, yes, he knew of alcohol being used aboard the ship, and we've now had two other people who've come in and said they had no knowledge of that.
And we've heard also repeated questions about what Exxon's policy is. Everyone has made it clear that they understood that there was a policy that using alcohol is a fireable offense.
And everybody has been asked whether they've ever been searched, and they've said no.
That's true, and that's a question that's been asked of every single one of the... This ice is important. That is the reason that was given for the Exxon Valdez deviating far out of the established tanker lanes and way over toward Busby Island and later Bligh Reef. And Greg Cousins, who was the third mate, at the time described a cone of ice. The captain seemed convinced, at least the way Cousins described it, that there was a large amount of ice that would necessitate changing courses. The only person we've had actually give anything that resembles confirmation of the ice is Maureen Jones, who said that she did see something on the radar screen. She asked Cousins if it was ice. He said it was.
Yeah, earlier they tried to elicit that from the pilot without very much success. He just said, well, I'm not really down there where the ice comes in, so I really can't say. And it was mentioned that there was ice in the journey coming in the day before.
There was also some question about the radar that was being used to detect the ice. Greg Cousins was using, was a 3-centimeter radar.
Right.
And yeah. The pilot said that he generally prefers using in situations a 10-centimeter radar because it is less affected by weather. And
gets into the weather, but then on the other hand, the weather was improving. So there's a lot still if you're a nautical buff, there's all kinds of technicalities still to be gotten into as these hearings continue. But right now we're on a break, and we'll be back with you shortly. From KSKA and APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to show you how to exercise your wrist tonight.
Mr. Kagan. Mr. Robert Kagan, please take the witness stand, please.
All right, we're ready to take it again. And for the final time this evening, we're back at the National Transportation Safety Board hearings into the wreck of the Exxon Valdez. I'm Steve Heimel. With me is Bruce Melzer. This is joint coverage of APRN and KSKA. One more witness to go this evening will be Robert Kagan. He was the helmsman when the ship actually went aground on Bligh Reef on the 24th of March, 1989.
During the course of his testimony, you'll hear questions from a large number of people. There are members of the Board of Inquiry. There are technical experts who will be asking questions, plus the Coast Guard commander, a representative of the state, Bob Laresh, Exxon, are all permitted to ask questions. So let's go to Mr. Kagan's testimony.
Of AB's ticket.
And how long have you had an AB ticket?
Since 1981.
All right, sir. Mr. Woody?
Right. Mr. Kagan, what watch are you assigned to on the Exxon Valdez?
The 12 by 4.
12 to 4. Did you stand the 12 to 4 watch after the ship entered port in Valdez on the 23rd of March?
Yes, I did.
After your watch at 4 o'clock in the morning, what did you do?
I went down and ate something and went back up and went to bed.
Okay. And how long did you sleep?
I slept till 11:20.
And were you called for your next watch at that time?
Yes, I was.
And you stood in a 12-to-4 watch in the afternoon?
Yes, I did.
After your watch, what did you do?
Went up and relaxed a little bit and got ready for supper.
Okay. After supper, what did you do then?
I went straight to my room and laid in my easy chair.
All right. Were you called for any duties sometime after that, like securing the ship for sea or handling lines?
Yes, I was.
And which duties were you called for?
Securing all the lines, securing the ship ready for sea.
Okay. And after securing the ship for sea, then were you called to be a line handler sometime?
Yes, I was.
Do you recall about what time that was? Would it have been during the 8 to 12 watch?
Yes, it was.
Okay. After handling lines, what did you do then?
Well, when we secured everything on deck, and secured all the wires, I went up to my room and sat in my easy chair.
All right. Were you called for watch at some time after that?
Yes, I was.
About how much rest did you have in your easy chair?
About hour and a half, something.
Okay. And about what time were you called for your watch?
About 11:20.
And were you already dressed for watch at that time?
Yes, I was.
So about what time did you get to the bridge? Or did you go directly to the bridge after being called?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And about what time did you get on the bridge?
I got up there about 11:45. Excuse me, 10 minutes to 12.
Okay. And do you recall anything unusual about relieving the watch?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Did you have to go back to your cabin for anything?
Yes, I did. I had to go get my coat.
So by the time you got your coat returned to the bridge, about what time was it that you relieved the helm?
It must have been about 5 minutes to 12.
Okay. And do you recall what course the vessel was on at that time?
The helmsman was punching in on the gyro at 180.
180. And who was the helmsman that you relieved?
Harry Clare.
Harry Clare. So when you relieved, the vessel then was on the gyro?
Yes, it was.
On course of 180?
Yes, it was.
Do you recall who was in the bridge at that time? Who was in the wheelhouse at that time?
My watch partner was on the wing of the bridge, and all I saw was the third mate.
Third mate. Was the captain on the bridge, to your knowledge?
Don't think so.
Do you recall taking the vessel off of gyro?
The third mate took the vessel off the gyro.
Did you try to help him at the same time?
Yes, I did.
Were your both fingers on the button at the same time?
Well, he beat me to it.
Okay. Was he in any kind of hurry to do this?
Yes, he was.
Okay. Had he given you any rudder orders before that?
No, he didn't.
Okay. After the button was pushed, the vessel was off gyro, did he give you some orders then?
Yes, he did.
How soon after that did he give you orders?
About 2 or 3 minutes later.
2 or 3 minutes later?
Yes.
What was your first rudder order that you received?
I believe it was 10 degrees.
10 degrees. And what was the next rudder order?
It was 20.
And about how long between the two orders would you estimate it was?
About a minute or two.
Minute or two. Would this be something like 60 seconds to 120 seconds?
I really don't remember.
That's a little bit too precise. It was minutes rather than moments, so.
Yes.
Okay. Because like moments would be like seconds.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And after the right 20, what order did he give you then?
He gave me a hard right.
Okay. Now, when he gave you the right 10 and right 20 orders, did he seem to be calm at that time?
Yes, I think he was.
How about the hard right?
He's just walked over and told me hard right.
Was he excited or panicking anyway?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. Was the vessel's head swinging to the right at this time?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Let me go back to the right 10 degrees rudder. Do you recall whether the vessel was swinging right after the right 10 degrees?
It probably was starting into a swing.
It was starting. Do you recall looking at anything like the rate of turn indicator to see if it were turning?
Yes, I did.
Do you customarily use the rate of turn indicator when you're steering?
Yes, I do.
And so you did look at it?
Yes, I did.
After the right 10 degrees rudder?
Yes, sir.
And did it indicate that the vessel was swinging?
It didn't start to swing until he gave me 15.
Until he gave you 15?
Yes.
Okay, so in between the 10 and the right 20, there was a right 15 degrees rudder?
Wait a minute, I'm getting confused.
I may have confused you, sir.
It was a 20 degree rudder.
The 20 command. Degree, okay. And where is the rate of turn indicator the one that you watched?
On the forward bulkhead.
All right. Is that the one you customarily watch?
Yes, I do.
Is there one on the console also?
Yes, there was.
Okay. Now, do you recall any headings that the vessel was passing after the right 20 degrees rudder?
I do not remember.
Okay. Same question for the hard right. Do you recall anything at hard right, any particular heading change?
The gyro started to spin, to click off.
And were the clicking indicates the heading change?
Yes, it was.
Were the clicks coming rather more quickly at the hard right?
Yes, it was.
Okay. About how, just describe to us now, the vessel is at hard right and it's swinging a little faster. What was the next thing that happened?
I just had it on hard right.
Hard right?
Yes.
Did the vessel ground sometime after that?
I think it had a little bumpy sensation after that.
Okay. Now, how would you characterize the grounding or the bumping?
It was like short bumps.
Short bumps?
Yes.
About how many bumps before the ship came to stop?
I can't remember.
Were you aware when the ship did come to stop?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. And as the ship, the first bump, did anything happen after that?
Yes, the mate told me to give me a hard left.
And did you put the wheel hard left?
I put the ship hard left.
Okay. Did he also take the wheel and spin it hard left at that
time? We both spun it together.
Both spun it together. Okay. Now, after the hard left, where did the next helm orders come from? Was it from the mate or?
It came from the captain.
From the captain. Did you hear the captain come on the bridge?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Where was the first, when the captain gave you the first order, where was he at?
He was right in front of me.
Right in front of you. Did you see him go by you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Okay. And what kind of orders did he give you?
He was giving me a couple of hard lefts and hard rights.
I see. And what was the third mate doing at this time?
I didn't notice.
Did you notice him at any time over at the controls for the engines?
No, I didn't.
Okay. About how long was this so-called bumpy sensation that the ship, I think when we interviewed you, you called it a bumpy ride.
Yes.
How long did the bumpy ride last?
Oh, just a very few minutes.
Very few minutes. Now, are we speaking about minutes or moments?
Moments.
Moments. Would it be something like a matter of seconds? Just sort of count off in your mind and see if you can recollect how many seconds it might have been.
It might have been a minute.
A minute and 60 seconds.
30 seconds, I'm sorry.
Something like 30 seconds or less. Okay, we're not trying to be too specific. Just if you can recall, we would welcome the information. Okay. Now, Do you have any feeling for how long the captain stood there giving you orders to the helm?
No, I don't.
Okay. Do you recall any time that the captain sometimes